Welcome to Here We Grow, a grassroots podcast by Southwest Georgia Farm Credit focused on education and inspiring growth down on the farm, at home, and in rural communities. Whether you're a farmer or farmer, advocate, land lover, or southern dweller, we have industry experts and homegrown leaders ready to share their insights with you. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Here We Grow. I'm your host, Billy Billings, a relationship manager with Southwest Georgia Farm Credit. Today, I welcome John Kohler to the episode. Mr. Kohler's professional career is dedicated to specialty land brokerage, advising, and marketing quail plantations. Named the plantation broker by Garden & Gun magazine, his passion for conservation has led him to develop a unique market niche representing landowners who practice good land stewardship, marketing these properties worldwide. Our episode today will focus on all things land, with insights into John's impressive property sales, portfolio, passion for marketing, knowledge in land management, and expertise attracting niche buyers. Mr. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Billy. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. All right. Before we get started, let's just kind of dive in on your education background and kind of how you got to start John Kohler & Associates.
Well, I'm a third-generation land broker, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, quite frankly. I love land. I had a passion for land. And I was sitting in Professor John Lewis's real estate class at Florida State. And he told us a story about two plantation brokers, Doug Dickinson and Dan Whitehurst. And they had sold these two plantations. And I'm like, whoa, that's a job. That's a career. I'm going to do that. So that was an epiphany. The next day, I went to Tall Timbers and decided I'd learn everything I possibly could learn about selling plantations, and that's where it started.
So how long has John Kohler & Associates been around?
1991.
Okay, that was a good year. That's the year I joined everybody on planet Earth. So I know y'all represent multiple states, I mean, and you got some footprint nationwide, but kind of where do you see right now, you know, a lot of action in the market, and just kind of describe those. I know there's several different plantation belts, so where all do y'all represent? And
so what we do is we like to sell and represent fun land, environmentally sensitive land, land that has a story, land that has a high intrinsic value, kind of like plantations, or it could be farmland too, which, you know, riverfront property, springs, stuff like that. And they're really gravitated into four main plantation belts, if you will. You've seen those probably from our maps, right, our famous maps. And those are across really four main states: Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina. Most of them are gravitating to certain areas. But if there's good land outside these areas, we represent that too.
Very nice. Well, looking at y'all's marketing pictures, y'all do represent some of the finest properties out there. I never not go through every photo y'all have on the website or online, because they are really are magnificent properties. So, what is it about your passion for land? I know I share that same passion, but just tell the listeners, you know, what is it about getting out on a piece of property that means so much to you, the people you represent, sellers and buyers?
So we feel that we have a duty to represent the land and the legacy. So, you know, we say sometimes we represent the landowner, sometimes we represent the buyer, but we always represent the land. And so what we do is we tell the land story. We tell the property people why it's so special, why it's been saved and protected as it has. Most of these places we represent have been, and that's really a calling. We've really become more of an ambassador, if you will, than say a salesman. And we're trying to pull up this entire niche and bringing all these properties up together and let people really realize where the intrinsic value is, because quite frankly, it wasn't always like that. You know, when we started, people didn't look at these high quality recreational lands as a separate asset class like they do now.
Right. And I know there with each buyer, each seller, you know, they're looking at land for at least a certain separate things. But what do you see when someone comes to you and says, hey, I want to buy a nice property? Obviously, it's an investment. But, you know, are they coming for the fiber and timber value? Or are they coming just for a second home, place to get away? Or is it more so the wildlife and the outdoorsman?
You know, that's a great question. A lot of people, it changes over time. You know, for a while, there's a lot of timber people. You know, we sell a lot of timberland, farmland for income stream. But quite frankly, right now, the emphasis is on recreational land that you can spend time in God's great outdoors, your friends and family. And really, a lot of people want to improve the habitat of the property, which is really great. And they're coming to me looking for, what are some properties that just got great habitat that I can accentuate? Of course, the value has to be there too. But as this niche has grown and expanded, the properties that have the better habitat have increased in value so much so that it really surprised a lot of people to see recreational land selling for more than irrigated farmland, or like a property we just closed on the Flint River selling more than even in Thomasville, $8,000 an acre for 1,400 acres because as trophy Boone and Crockett whitetails. I mean, that shocks a lot of people, but that's something we do a lot of now.
Most definitely. So obviously, I mean, representing the nicest properties out there, but you got to let the buyers out there nationwide, worldwide know that they're out there. So tell us about the real estate or plantation marketing group and what drove you to create that.
Well, you know, in business school, a professor told us, even during bad times, he said, you double down on your marketing. So in good times, we triple down. We have two full-time marketing people. In fact, a marketing assistant, I realized last year, had their own assistant. That's starting to get pretty deep. That's two of my marketing people are part-time, been with me for 20 years. We've just developed a way, a methodology of showing people really across the world how special and very unique these properties are. We do that through Plantation Marketing Group, Land Leader. We're just all about marketing. I mean, I really can't stress that enough.
Yeah, well, the saying is, you know, they're not making any more of it. I've always heard that from my grandfather, and I think I might have heard you say it today. And so, you know, being able to sell these large tracts that seem to be fewer and fewer these days is definitely an honor and a good calling to have.
Well, I might interrupt you on that. This is something that's fascinating, too, that few people don't realize. So what you just said was true, except recently, as we've realized that this market's grown, the recreational market, we're actually adding new properties to these maps we have. There are actually more high-quality recreational properties today than there used to be. Hmm. So you have to ask yourself why. And the reason is they're very, very valuable. In fact, we ran across a guy the other day. He had some longleaf pine. And he was going to, you know, clear cut the pine and put it into ag. And we're like, well, if you just thin half the pine and turn it into wild quail, it'll be worth even more than your ag. He's like, what? Yeah, and you can have your pine, harvest half your pines too. He goes, oh my God. And so we're able to show that to people. It's really fascinating. And a secret too that very, very few people know is land that's been frequently burned, not just once, but over time, you know, it's worth about $1,200 an acre more than the property right next door that hasn't been burned. And you ask yourself, why is that? Because of the high quality recreational value, the habitat value. And so as more people see that, encourages more people to improve the land. It's really quite fascinating.
Right. Yeah, because if you get in there and you have it burned properly, you're going to have all those hardwoods. That's going to take time, money to clean up and get it, and not to mention just the habitat that you're going to have to destroy to then wait for time to come back and grow. So
on the attorney side, I'm not a really firm attorney. I became an attorney to specialize in land. It's really interesting. So what happened is, my dad was a highly successful, highly educated board certified neurologist, and I'm a third generation. My mom was a broker, and so is my granddad. So how do you combine that into real estate? Back then, didn't have any specialties. You weren't going to be that category of what my dad was. So I'm like, what do I do? But that's when I had that epiphany to be a plantation broker. It's a niche, a specialty. I didn't know it, you know. So I'll turn that into a specialty. So then I went to Tall Timbers the very next day, learned everything I've and every pretty much since, and learned everything I could about plantation management, land management, and of course I got a degree in real estate. And I'm like, wait a minute, what if I had a law degree that teach you how to persuade, negotiate? That would really catapult me something that no one else had. And so that's why I went to law school, really to be a plantation broker, and that's how I came about that.
So learning all you can about plantations from Tall Timbers, obviously there were some mentors along the way. Who would you say helped you get to where you are or drove you to where you wanted to be?
So the mentors, I can't stress enough. I wish I learned earlier on how important mentors were. And I picture myself meeting God one day, and he's going to say, okay, John, by the way, I put this person in your life here. You saw it. You recognized it, and you profited from it. Other people, like a baseball pitch, I just probably never saw it coming, right? Completely right. Missed it. So, you know, I mentioned this Doug Dickinson and Dan White, the professor John Lewis mentioned in class, and they became mentors of mine. and of critical mentors, quite frankly. And one of them, Doug, actually introduced me to Jim Dahl. And he said, Jim, you need to hire this guy to represent you and handle this thing. And I thought I knew a lot about real estate, the degrees in law, the Juris Doctor, this and that. I didn't know anything compared to what high net worth people really thought until I met Jim Dahl. I mean, he was Michael Milken's ex-partner, you know, from the junk bond days. I mean, he's one of the world's top salesmen and knew everything about finance and actually turned buying land and converting them into plantations into a niche. And we created a lot of wealth doing that. And so I had a seat at the table with him, and it just opened my mind up to things I had never seen before and learned ways of finance and technique and looking at land and really seeing the intrinsic value and learning how to best monetize that. That was fascinating.
Right. So knowing how kind of the top tiers think out there and the plantation world works, you've come to develop a term known as social storm properties. Can you kind of tell us what that means, what those properties represent, and why that's so much bigger now than it ever has been?
So, I've got a biblical worldview, and so I saw a lot of things, like a lot of people do, as things progress, things, like the Bible says that they do. But I also noticed a lot of buyers were coming to me looking for properties that they could go to in bad times, all for different reasons. Some people worry about global warming. Some people, everybody has a different issue. But they're very, very quiet about it. And I said, well, I started following this. And I said, this is a big deal, because I noticed these properties were always the first ones to be chosen, because they have the higher value than the others. So I just coined the term social storm properties and trademarked that about a dozen years ago. And back then, I was the only one really talking about it. In fact, my own marketing staff begged me to stop talking about it, because I'm like, no, bad things could happen, right? And like, just shut up, John, because you never heard a broker say anything but good, have you? I mean, a broker's can only say something's going to be better. They never talk about bad things. Right. It's not their DNA. But I was. And, then the pandemic came along. Now, sadly, everybody talks about bad things can happen. We've seen it. That's like what I'll say now. It's just the first pandemic or worse, And everybody has a concern from now, aliens, to World War III, to EMP. Everybody's got one, right? And so we categorize, we've been measuring and weighing these social storm properties and these certain things that you need to have. And so we've studied this for over a decade. So when the pandemic came along, the people just naturally gravitated us, because we spoke the language of what their needs are. And, sadly, it's really a part of every transaction now. I mean, from all types of faiths and walks of life and everything.
Right. So what are some of these characteristics that a social storm property may need to have?
Well, the first thing, when you talk about something bad happening, people rush out and go buy bullets, right? Or bullets. And that's much more than that. You want to have comfort for your family, So it was a sad state of affairs looking at people. I used the former governor of Arkansas, Olivia's from Arkansas there, Mike Huckabee, he has his place at the beach. It was, I don't know, Santa Rosa or Rosemary Beach. He's got, picture three generations of family in this little beach house, right? And then the beach is closed. So all these kids are just jumping through. They're wanting to go outside. They can't. Well, imagine if he had 500 acres of timberland in Northwest Florida, Southwest Georgia, to ATVs in a pond. They're growing fiber and timber as part of his investment portfolio. His family would have had the spring of the lifetime there, And so people have realized, wow, all of my assets are held up in these stocks or other investments that are not giving extra value to my family in time of need. Right. And families recognize that too now. Mm-hmm. So there's things, these social storm properties, that are also a good investment, because mostly of them are recreational. So if tomorrow's a better day, they'll go up in value at the recreational market. But if tomorrow's a worse day, they're the perfect hedge. They'll go up even more.
Right.
I mean, we might name it some kind of investment you can buy that's like that.
Yep.
And so people are like, wow. And so everyone, again, with a different concern or level of risk, they come and they buy these properties for us. And to answer your question, also hard assets, like timber, farming, cattle. You want to have water. Have a safe place. Safety is a big deal, and sadly becoming more and more important in America today. That's what people are really worried about that. There's a whole list of criteria. We just measure and balance them and work with people, because everyone has their own individual needs and own threats that they want to mitigate.
Right. So essentially a property you can get out on be in a recluse area that provides, you know, essentially food and water for a family for a foreseeable period of time.
I can see your naturalness, Billy. So, you probably have your own already.
Hey, I'm looking to get it bigger. You know, the saying is, yeah, you know, I only want what borders me. Well, every time you buy something, your border's now a little bit bigger.
So. I've got a feeling you don't need more bullets either.
So, circling back to the recreational tracks, I did see an article not too long ago that says, you know, that 1 to 50 acres and the 50 to, you know, 250, well, they're actually foreseeing that, you know, that the 500 plus acres tracks were now bringing more. And I guess that's because the higher net worth individuals are seeing value in those larger tracks.
Yeah, so it's always been a misnomer for people. A lot of people would just assume that a larger the track would mean lower the price per acre. That's really not the case at all. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I don't know how much time you want to spend on that, but these higher quality tracks, they just command a premium. I mean, there's a lot of cash in the market. Is a massive amount of cash. I think we went one time $300 million in deals with a single finance transaction. It's probably pushing that now. And those guys only see property they want. And it's think of it as hard work to find land, you know. But then a lot of these guys will then borrow on their asset they have, you know, the land they have already.
Right.
It's just interesting as well.
Yeah, essentially cross collateralized.
Exactly. No, exactly.
Legend for the deal, most mm-hmm. definitely. So, if you got a recreational track, one you bought from you or one you had handed down to your family, what are some of the land practices that you advise all land stewards do in order to maintain or increase the value of the property?
So, the number one most important thing you can possibly do is use prescribed fire on a consistent basis. Every 2 years, it'd be the perfect one. 3 years at the outset. I can't stress that enough. Emphasize your water features. Water's critical. Having a pond, a spring, whatever, just emphasizing that's critical. You know, and privacy, people worry about safety a lot more now. Privacy is a big deal. A really big deal is manage your deer herd. I can't stress that enough. Good trail camera pictures document the kind of deer people are really looking for. Really good, high quality deer hunting experiences with friends and family. And they'd really like to grow mature deer, whatever size that might be for your area. Just they want to see really good mature deer. And then get with somebody for like Tall Timbers or Quail Forever. There's great biologists, a lot of help for guidance, a lot of different programs that can help you. Get somebody like that you can trust. Those would be the first few things I do.
Okay. To circle back on a question we were talking about earlier, we talked about the Plantation Marketing Group, but you mentioned Land Leader TV. Is that correct? Can you dive into that? Is it kind of another extension of that? Or
yeah. So, you know, maybe it's a dozen or so years ago. I forget. A lot of these top land brokers came together, which is very organic. Organically came together. It was very strange because real estate brokers are more, they're not the kind that kind of collaborate so much together. You know, they're independent type of business people. But we saw a need. If we pool all of our resources together, we could do marketing things that we couldn't do on our own. And we wouldn't be driven by these franchise models you see, which are really essentially trying to make the franchise fit the landowner. We're like, no, we're the brokers. We know exactly what the landowner needs to have done to help them market their land. Let's look at it like that. And it worked tremendously. Now there's a couple hundred brokers across America. It's fascinating. We learned how to do TV or video, which if you've watched our site, we're very, very heavily invested in video because we tell the land story through interviewing the landowner, doing the buyer's homework ahead of time for them. We can reach the world with these properties on a perfect bluebird day, the Chamber of Commerce day. And almost every property I personally list has a video. I think the one we're doing now on Southlands needs to be cut, but they told me it's 52 minutes. Now that's starting to push it. But that's telling some stories, you know.
No doubt. Well, I mean, some of these properties take an hour long to tell a story or even begin to tell it.
Oh, yeah, so. Or yeah, one of them we just listed, it was like 6 hours to show it. Yeah, well, of course, the video is going to be a long time, you know.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of South Georgia. I've lived all over the United States, but I've now planted my flag here and don't really plan on going anywhere. But, you know, for representing the plantation belts down here in the four states that you mentioned earlier, where are you seeing your buyers come from, and why are they picking Southwest Georgia or South Alabama or North Florida? What are the reasons for that? I know it's mainly just because they find a high quality property that they fall in love with, but what are the features about the areas, to say Thomasville, for instance, that you see draw a lot of people here?
Well, the first thing they see, they recognize value. They recognize it's something they can buy that'll appreciate in value, that they can sell when they want to sell it. And that wasn't always the case. And they recognize, they really like the cultural aspects of this area. We're very strong in that. It's a great, clean, wholesome, beautiful area, from the farming to the plantations to the timber. People tell me that reminds them of when they were a kid, you know, the America they grew up with. It's what we have up here to offer. We've got great towns up here, and they come from all over the world. They, particularly, they're coming from Central Florida, quite frankly, but that doesn't have to always be the case. And there's nothing else, what we have to offer, there's nothing else like it in the world.
Well, so we talked about Land Leader. We've talked about Plantation Marketing Group. What are just some of the strategies that y'all use to A, reach seller or reach buyers for your sellers, and then to, you know, broadcast y'all's brokerage skills to find future listings?
So when a seller, landowner comes to us, or any broker, they're really looking for three things. What do you know? Who can you reach? And who's on your Rolodex? I mean, that's really what they're looking at. And if you can hit all three of those things, you'll knock it out of the park. So we invest very, very heavily on our Rolodex. You can imagine, after specializing and just focusing on this for 30 years, what it's built up to be. And that gives people a high level of confidence. And I don't remember the stats off the top of my head, but it's very, very high. How many people, I think it's from Eric and I, a sales team, it's over 90% of what we sell to people that we knew before we even listed their property. So you can imagine, if you're a landowner, you're going to someone, a broker, and he knows so many people, you have a high probability of the broker already knowing the future buyer.
Right.
All right. And then you tap from there, you tap it into the knowledge. You know, when things come up, are we going to have answers first? Just like all of us, you're a buyer of the property. You want to have an immediate answer to a problem. Well, we know what the problem is going to be before the buyer even thinks about it. We've most likely solved it. That's why we have so many marketing people working with us, answering, doing the buyer's due diligence for them. So we're going to handle that. And the reach is unbelievable. I mean, between us, Land Leader, or my website, it's absolutely fascinating. So we're going to cover all three of those. And that's how we focus on things.
Well, to get named a plantation broker by Garden & Gun, you have to have obviously moved a lot of land, a lot of high quality land. So just for some round numbers, or if you got more exact numbers, what have y'all closed in past recent years or this year, or acres and or?
So we sell about $500,000 a day, 7 days a week. We've been doing that for years. That's good. In fact, it worked out so well that normally either Walter Hatchett or our top salesman or me or both finishes in the top 20 of all land brokers nationwide, according to the Realtor Land Institute. I think a year or two ago, I was the number one recreational. I think I sold $120 million just myself that year. So I outsold every other land broker in America.
Wow.
That's about as good a high. It earned the Apex Award. But what really fascinates me, and they're the highest honor, though, is selling some of these properties three, four, and even five times in our career. And so what that shows me is regardless of who we represented during that transaction, that next person saw so much value in what we did and respected our advice so much that when they went to sell, they wanted us to represent them.
Right.
And so I love that. I also love what we're able to do for our area landowners. I mean, our average sale, and I guess it was last year I did the stat, it was $6,500 an acre for these, which is about, as you know, about $1,000 an acre more than their normal recreational land market. You know, how much of that is towards our social storm? How much of that is because of our unique marketing? We'll see. But it's an amazing statistic. Absolutely amazing. And we've got some just great stories where what we've able to do, you know, compared to other properties that were on the market, when we were coming with our team, a place like say, Terra Chula, that was on the market, great place on the market for years, at like $9.6 million. and the seller calls us. He goes, it hasn't sold. I don't have an offer in years. He goes, what's it worth? And I tell him $12.25 million. You know, he's right. Like, come on, Kohler. I mean, click, you know, and doesn't believe us. And thankfully, that one, our mutual friend, Kevin Kelly, he's like, no, Kohler knows what he's doing. We convinced him, you know, it's worth 12.25, which is, you know, convincing a seller's one thing, is convince a buyer, right?
Right.
No, but we sold it the first day for 12.25 to our Rolodex. We had two buyers lined up. I mean, the first day we had to remarket it and rebrand and everything. But I mean, made him, what, was that 2.6 million
yep.
more than it was on the market for a week earlier? Yeah. You know, and you know, it's things like that, or like Pine Woods, it was under contract for, I think, $6.2 million with other brokers, you know, and the buyer said, you know, I didn't have a dog in the hunt. He says, I'm gonna get out of this deal. I think you should have more equipment or whatever. So like, whatever. So the seller calls me out of the blue. So what do you think it's worth? I'm like, you know, a couple million more than that. Forget the exact number, but I got the original buyer who walked on the deal, who could have by then bought it, raised his own offer by $1 million, what he could have already bought it for. He goes, John, why didn't anyone else tell me what you told me about right. the value? I'm like, well, you didn't ask. Then, yep. But now you should raise it. And he still didn't get to buy it. I sold it to someone else on my Rolodex even higher than that. I made the guy over $2 million more. You know, just stories like that after that. It just... You know, when you do start doing these, you know, the landowners see that and they trust you and they're like, yeah, I see where this is going.
Well, I mean, I'm sure most of these buyers and sellers, they know what they have, but it's nice to have an expert tell them exactly what it's worth. I mean, they, like you said, I mean, a property, yeah, $9 million sounds good, but $12 million sounds a lot better. So,
you know, we talked earlier, you know, about looking forward to what land could be worth or should be worth and measuring intrinsic value, because the way people value land is this comparative sales approach, which is really the main model that most people use. And it was developed in the 50s when people were building like similar residential subdivisions, right? And they apply that somehow to land and it just doesn't work. A great example is where really somebody almost made a huge mistake is we were helping some landowners going through a divorce and the court hired us as expert witness. And they asked an appraiser, great appraiser. In fact, I've used him. He didn't do anything wrong. He says worth $17 million. And another broker asked for his opinion. He says worth $16 million. And we said it was worth $26 million. And the magistrate's like, well, read our report. And he said, well, yours is the most thorough and persuasive, but my gosh, you're so far different from these other two. And I said, you know, Your Honor, we're just hired to do a broker price opinion. Would it be wrong if we brought an offer? Would that help? He goes, absolutely. So 24 hours, I go to my Rolodex, I bring an offer for $25 million. And I didn't even know at the time, but the buyer, he used to own part of the property. He goes, heck yeah, I'll buy it. We showed him our analysis, and he eventually raised his offer to 26. So there's $10 million found.
It's left off the table.
Yeah. On one property.
Yep.
And we see this time and time again. And again, the other guys didn't do anything wrong. They're just using the wrong model. There's a new model. It's this intrinsic value model. So if you look at our videos, you look at our short films, you look at everything we do, it's about storytelling and showing the intrinsics and measuring and valuing those intrinsics. It's very, very difficult. And that's really the summary of what we do different. It's just critical to these landowners to get that right. I mean, you look at all your farming clients, your timber clients. Imagine what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, even 10% difference would be in value.
Oh, yeah.
Just by measuring the value of your property differently.
Yep.
I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, I've definitely seen some listings that have stayed on with other brokers before, and then y'all pick them up, and they seem to be gone and deeded in a new owner's name the next year, so... Y'all definitely are good at finding that intrinsic value and marketing it and getting it into the right hands. Because I know a lot of times these sellers too, they don't want anybody just to buy their property. They want it to be the right new owner. And it's good to have those contacts in your phone just to be able to call them up. So you might not have to answer this one, but is there one property out there that you've sold that you can say is your most favorite property?
You know, that's a good question. And I deliberately don't have an answer for that, but I can tell you some good ones. You know, Greenwood obviously was just, you know, the largest stand of virgin longleaf pine left in the world, 1,200 acres. you know, 4,000 acres. I mean, you have to think of this place. The house was declared the greatest example of grief revival architecture in all of America, right? But I'm a land guy. I love land. You know, these Virgin Longley, some of them are 600 years old.
Wow.
And so the client said, John, you price it and you sell it to who you need to sell it to and price it. You do what you need. We sold it to a lady that owned the second largest stand, right? A 93-year-old lady that owned the second largest stand of Virgin Longleaf left. The weight missed away, the weight track. So that's a great one. You know, or one we just listed now, you know, the seller calls me, he said, hey, I'm 30 minutes from Birmingham, Alabama, and I've got a quail per acre, you know. I'm like, really? It reminded me of Jesus's apostles. And I listen to Tall Timbers. I know what they do. I preach it. But a bird per acre that Tall Timbers helped them get a wild quail in Birmingham in the mountains up there. And we went up there and by gosh, they have. I might be doubting Thomas, but they had a bird per acre. It's like the top three highest concentrations of wild quail in Alabama. Wow. And there wasn't a bird in the entire county before Tall Timbers came in and did their certain steps. And this landowner's credit, he followed their steps religiously to the T, and he has it. And that's just fascinating to me.
Well, being a landowner yourself, what is one thing you enjoy the most about? I know you have two children now. What do you like most about getting out on your property? Is there a certain piece of wildlife you like to chase the most, or just the whole package deal?
I love everything about the land. I tell people now on my place, we raise boys, you know, so I've got boys out there constantly and dogs. I love boys and bird dogs and anything that I don't need any excuse whatsoever to spend more time on the land. The people ask me, hey, you want to go here? I go, listen, I think there's still places on my farm I haven't seen yet. Yep. And I want to keep exploring or I haven't been to frequently. I just love every bit of it. I love to learn from these landowners and people like Tall Timbers and Quail Fair what they do and then apply it to my own property. Sure, what I like to do is maximize the beauty of the land. I want to make it beautiful and I want to maximize the utility, whether it's fishing or the bird hunting or the deer, whatever that would be, where people really enjoy God's great outdoors together and spend a lot of time there.
Right. After 30 years of doing this, what is one thing you've seen or learned the most that you can relay to your buyers and sellers or your prospective customers?
So the thing about it that when I was in Florida State, we had class statistics. And I learned a lot about that. There's not enough transactions up here in North Florida, Southwest Georgia, Alabama to catch up. So even though we've broken the $10,000 an acre mark 4 or 5 times this year, and you think that's a big number. In fact, we sold 1,000 acres for $15,000 an acre. We've made some really good sales. It's still undervalued. If you look at Central Florida, the land there, the lower quality land there, there's just so many more transactions there. And so no matter what you do up here, unless you do something crazy, no matter what number you spend up here, it's going to be worth it because it's now a comp, right? You can't do it. What other asset class can you buy something? And then whatever number you pay, even if you set the high, it's now the comp. There's not that many comps. Now it's worth it. So you might not have immediate equity in it, but you're also now the owner.
Right.
And it's just fascinating to me how this continues to work over time and time and time again. And there's no slate up. And so really, all these properties are just inherently undervalued for what they are. I can't preach that enough. Even though we're making some really, really high sales, a lot of them are like, for instance, the one that just closed up, you know, we just sold a property, 1,400 acres for the second time on the Flint River in Albany for $8,100 an acre. Yet some of these properties down here on the Clackney River, one just sold recently for thousands of dollars less. Like, how does that happen, right? With a different brokerage, but just they were looking at things differently. They didn't do anything wrong. They're just looking at things differently. Or some land we just sold one, Twin Oaks, we got like $6,140 an acre for like 1,800 acres under a conservation easement. That's more than a lot of these other properties are selling without an easement. How?
Right.
You know, and then 10,000 acres part of it without. So you have to look at what the buyer's really looking at, want to accomplish, what the asset is, and look at it from a different perspective and stop looking at the wrong comps. Does that make sense?
Right.
You got to look fast forward because there's not very many of these properties. You have to fast forward and not look back, which is what the sales comparative model teaches us. It teaches most people to look back, like a history lesson, but you can't look back. You have to look forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know having a water feature like a pond or a lake is nice, but being on a little Oclotney River or the Flint, I think that's invaluable. I think that's hard to put a true value on that. Do you have a guesstimate as to where, you know, area in, or land in Southwest Georgia area would be at per acre, you know, in a 5-10 year period? I know we've seen it come from, I mean, 1,000 to 2,000 to now these numbers, and now it's rising. I mean, where is the limit? Do you know?
It depends on the nature of the country. So if tomorrow's a better day, they're going to keep going up. And I don't know how high, but they're already inherently undervalued. If you're looking at the recreational aspect, looking at across the land across the whole country. But if tomorrow's a worse day and the country tanks, this is really where people want to go.
Yep.
You know, particularly Alabama is much more conservative right now than Georgia. Georgia's kind of purple. People go out of the red state, Florida. They have a flight to Florida. I even had a person came here from Texas. And they said they wanted to buy land in Florida because Texas wasn't red enough. You believe that? You know, yep. Right? But that's how people think if tomorrow's a worse day. And I think we're poised. And like we saw during the first pandemic, COVID, how much land spiked.
Right.
So if you're in a certain area that has these certain social storm characteristics, tomorrow's the worst day, I would expect a massive spike again. And if we're in a great scenario, it's going to still go up like it's always been.
Right. And you mentioned Texas. I mean, I know just having lived out in Texas for a while and still following land listings out there, I mean, the thatch and dry desert out there is going for, I mean, honestly, about what land is here, if not higher, and that's just a population thing. So that lets you know that this property over here, we've got access to water, we've got great rainfall, got a lot greener sceneries. I mean, why is it not?
You can't go wrong. You can't go wrong by buying land here. I learned that from Jim Dahl. He would come in consistently, and he would buy things at a top dollar, not always, but sometimes the right location. And some people, you know, and I learned this lesson. I called it the Thomasville rule. No matter what land was asked, the asking price was, after it sells, people would always come up to me and say, wow, I would have paid that. You know, like, well, duh, because somebody else did. Now they're the owner. You're not.
Yeah.
You know, wait 10 more years or whatever for it to sell. Or like Greenwood, it's been 158 years since Greenwood sold, you know, to outside family members. So, you know, that's, you can't go wrong by buying good, high-quality land in this area. You just can't.
Yep. Yeah, the Red Hills region is definitely special. I mean, I've enjoyed living here for 7 or 8 years. And, what is it, would you say, that makes Red Hills so special? I mean, I know sometimes people like to be closer to Thomasville, but at the same time, you know, if stuff does hit the fan, you know, they're going to be staying on the property. So,
yeah, well, a lot of people don't realize, too, like, you know, the original, you know, founders of the Red Hills, a lot of them came from, you know, Cincinnati, Ohio. And there's some social storm aspects into what they were here for as well. You know, there's reasons why they wanted their family and friends here, 40,000 acres of them, of the 300,000 acres today are still of the same families. But this whole area, this the people here, you know, we want to talk about the land's great, but really it's the people. We have a great social fabric here. We have a culture. We just all just love the outdoors,
yep.
Right? We get fire, we get hunting, we thrive on it. And that's really, really special. That's not, and we travel across the South, and there's other good lands, other places. I'm obviously biased. I love this area, but the people make the big difference.
Yeah. No, I can definitely agree with that. So having some Yankees in my family and then now living in the South, you definitely can pick up on the warmth and the congeniality of people down here. Well, yeah, these properties don't come up for sale very often. They're once-in-a-lifetime properties. So if you're listening today, please give John Kohler and Associates a call if you're looking for the right piece or have a piece that you may want to market for its true value. Being in the land financing business with Southwest Georgia Farm Credit, at closing sometimes or in the appraisal process, we sometimes come across properties that are in a conservation easement. Can you just go into your knowledge of what conservation easements, what's their value, and what are the perks of having them for a landowner?
Yeah. Sometimes, Billy, about like 40% of the Red Hills is under a conservation easement, you know, And they're great. They're great. It's and I love them. And what happens is, you know, the issue there is people are financially incentivized to have the best, most well capitalized, high quality recreational property they could possibly have, because that's the highest and best use forever, right?
Right.
And so it's no surprise that when I come across these properties, that guess what? They're better than most properties for a high quality recreational niche. You know, my own place is included. You know, got Eastmo Tall Timbers, and you know that's there's not going to be another use. So you might as well highly capitalize it for recreation, aesthetics, beauty, and it's just been a great thing. It's something we're really known for here in the Red Hills.
What is the process of enrolling a property if we've got a listener here that wants to? That has a large track, or I mean, is there a limit on the size of a track that you can put in a conservation easement, and what is the process they can go through legally to get one put into a conservation?
Well, easement? There are different ways. If, you know, Florida is the largest land buyer in the world, and they buy conservation easements. They also buy land and fee, but there's also more popular here in Southwest Georgia is the donation, and you donate the easements. There's really no limit, no limit at all. I just really reach out to Shane Wellendorf at Tall Timbers is really the best person, quite frankly, there is, the expert on that, and they'll guide you through the process.
Okay. Do a lot of your land buyers, I know they work with Tall Timbers, do you ever see them working with USDA or NRCS to come in and do surveys and to see what they should plant certain portions of their property in? And is there a certain, I know in this area, a lot of people are big fans of the longleaf because the straw and the understory that it provides for the wildlife. But, you know, if you were a new landowner, what would you advise somebody to come in and plant if they had some pasture land they wanted to take to forest?
Yeah, well, truth be told, again, you know, Tall Timbers handles that for me. They've got a certain longleaf program. They know that very well, those different programs. But so does Quail Forever. Quail Forever has more biologists than anyone else in the world. I think they're up to like 500. It's amazing across America. And what they do is they go through these farm programs, and the landowners reach out to them. These programs are very complicated, and they pull out the part of the program that'll help the quail or the pollinators or whatever would be, and they help you go through that process. So you just reach out to a Quail Forever biologist, Tall Timbers, if one of those guys, and they'll really walk you through the steps.
Okay. I've become recently a big fan of the chestnut tree, but on your farm and some other farms, do you see them planting hard mass trees, and which ones in particular?
No, I guess me chills. I love chestnuts. Every year I plant chestnuts. I've got all types of different chestnuts. I've even trying a dwarf variety this year. I've got all the tree protectors around them and everything else. But I hope they're not hurricane magnets. But
right.
But the you know, I that's really my go-to tree are these different chestnuts.
Yeah, I got fascinated with the American chestnut and the blight that came in. So I've been doing a lot of research and started actually a little side nursery. I've been growing some chestnut trees and sawtooths and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, some of them, like the white oak, I think takes 15, 20 years to drop any nuts for your deer, whereas a chestnut can five, 6 years.
Yeah, I've got some at five now. And then Auburn University developed a different model, different variety that drops at different times.
Okay.
So I've got them all scattered in little plots around my property, so they'll drop different times for the deer. Because I don't think there's a better a nut that can really feed white-tailed deer like a chestnut.
Yep.
You know, so then I'll have the perennial peanut field with a chestnut, then I'll have persimmons, two or three other types of tree species, you know, nearby.
Well, that's the deer fun. Probably living large on your place.
We have a JT down in Monticello has a big doe challenge, and I bring in a bunch of boys. I think every year we've certainly placed at the big doe challenge.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know we were talking over lunch about the thermal drone and how y'all use it sometimes in scouting these new properties. What are the aspects of using newer technology when you're showing these places? What has the drone brought to y'all's brokerage firm?
Well, you know, we've established, and it really surprises people, that a property that has, you can consistently harvest Boone and Crockett caliber whitetails, which a lot more places than you think, is really commanding more dollars right now than even wild quail places. We're just, you know, just knocking out of the park on some of those areas. So how do you do that? We have trail cameras. Where have you seen a lot, you know, we're heavily invested in and video, short films, we call them. And so instead of just relying only on a trail camera, you know, Walter Hatchett with my firm, he has a thermal drone. He'll fly over, like the other day we were filming Southlands, and, you know, they've killed numerous Boone and Crockett record book bucks there. We fly over and he can see them from the drone.
Wow.
Fly over them, hover down. And if you watch our video, you'll see him just browsing these enormous whitetails. And the technology is that adaptive where you can like find that caliber deer through otherwise hundreds of deer in the forest.
Right. Yep. I know I've been trying to find him from stand for a long time and I haven't been successful. So, but, and Southlands is still on the market, right? If someone's listening here today.
It just went on the market. Yeah. Okay. For the first time in 80 years. Yeah.
Yep. Well, you better strike because, I mean, 80 years is a lifetime. So if you want to own something like that, you better be ready to pull the trigger. So, okay. We mentioned, you know, growing dogs and growing boys on your farm. That's the two things you enjoy the most nowadays when you get time away from work. So what is it, what can you be found doing with your two sons on your property on any given day?
You know, little Ashton is a kind of a mini me. In fact, we're training bird dogs this week. He just shot a double on quail. Awesome. And he just loves every bit of it. I just like watching him grow and watching him have their experiences. You know, I worry that because when I was a kid, I didn't have the hunting like we do now. I worry that he won't realize how special and rare it is, you know, because right. His world, he's got some great stuff going on. I just love that. I love introducing their friends to the outdoors, God's great outdoors, and using it as a lesson, really a life lesson, you know, quite frankly. But that stage of my life, I'm able to do that and spend, you know, the majority of my time, free time there at the farm with friends and family.
Yeah, I remember living up north and coming down and being able to get out on the farm. It was just such a blessing. And then moving down here, it really is a special place in the world to be able to get out on God's great earth and enjoy the outdoors. So I know your sons are definitely appreciate it. Do they have anything particular? Do you see one becoming an angler over a hunter or vice versa? You know, sometimes some kids light up when they hook a largemouth bass and they never look back. So.
Yeah, or we raise tilapia even. You know,
oh, wow.
My wife is funny. She loves these trophy catfish. She'll come in and like, she has a special trophy catfish pond or like just for her.
And
she'll sit there for hours waiting for a drop, you know, but I see they're big as a grouper, you know, some of these things. But we just love it. But everybody's different. You know, who would think she likes the catfish, right? Or who would think that my other son, Ashton, loves to ride the ATV, but he doesn't really necessarily love to shoot so much, you know?
Right.
They're all just so different.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a four-wheeler ride through the woods. So of all the seeing all the properties that you get to see in your day-to-day job, you know, when you saw this property that you call your farm, your home base, What about this property appealed to you and made you want to own it?
So at the beginning of the conversation, I made a comment about how, you know, one day I'll meet God in person and he'll say, by the way, John, you know, I threw all these opportunities. You saw this one and nailed it and you missed X, Y, and Z, right? Well, my farm is really the same. It gives me chills thinking about it. I was at a family friend's place and, you know, we were just talking about a property on the Osceola River, which is almost impossible to find. It was 56 acres and had a crossing where the dogs would cut off. So you wanted someone friendly to buy it. And there's another, you know, 400 acres with it that really my family couldn't afford it at the time. But we were able to work together and we bought the 56 acres. And that's the beginning of what's now 500 at what I call Lick Skillet. And again, you know, and it's just I've been built from there. So that's kind of my home. It was originally just clear cut. And that was over 30 years ago. Now it's just beautiful after a time. So I really put my blood, sweat, and tears. My dad and I took little oak trees, you know, a foot tall and planted what's now an oak alley, 30-year-old our own oak alley. We didn't know what we were doing, but it's beautiful this day, right? And so we established perennial peanut, dug ponds, and I've just expanded over time. It's just been a really blessing, just quite a blessing by God. And that's just my home. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
I've had opportunities to buy perfect properties with virgin wiregrass and 300-year-old lawn. They've never been abused like my farm was. And I'm like, well, I think I would just get bored.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What am I going to fix, right?
Right.
What am I going to fix? So I just love fixing things. Like you said, planting chestnut trees is my latest thing. And I just try like making the land better.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's really been important to me.
Oh yeah, I truly enjoy that. I've been a landowner now for about 5 years, and you know, trees don't grow as fast as grass, but they grow, I mean, every single day. So we took about 85 acres out of peanut production and replanted that in pines and some hardwoods, and you know, now they've already got an understory underneath them, even in that short term. These new pines, they shoot on up. So we'll probably put our first fire in there this winter, and we'll see what the forester says, but I think they're ready, and but we'll see.
It's just so rewarding. Yep. Driving through year round, seeing how the trees are growing, or things that you've helped change, or you know, improve things. I just love that.
Yep. Well, having established such a strong plantation brokerage firm, you know, it obviously is very demanding time. I mean, you cover several states footprint wise. So, how do you balance all? Obviously you got a great team behind you too, but what makes it worth it to grind all day and then be able to make it home? I mean, obviously some realtors aren't as busy as you, so they have more time, and that's the leisure side of things. But you're a very busy man. So what is the balance, or how do you find the fine line between, you know, work and play?
Well, I've been blessed. My wife's my business partner. And until you just told me, I didn't know there was a balance.
Yep. Yep.
You know, we live at Centerville Conservation Community, which is 1,000 acres I bought and developed with Hurley Booth into, you know, we put 70% of our conservation easement. So we live there. So when I get home, I'll take the bird dogs and walk on 7 miles of trails and burn woods and with the family. And it just never stops. I mean, we don't really have a balance. It's just what we do full time every day.
Yep. But you got to live it because you live it because you love it. That's definitely evident in your sales and in the performance of your firm. So, well, I guess that concludes our podcast today with John Kohler. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, visit our website at swgafarmcredit.com. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite app to get notified of new episodes, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for great industry resources. Thanks again, John.
Thanks, Billy.